Hello and welcome to Two Peds in a Pod, the medical education podcast from the Children's Emergency Department in Derby. My name's Ian Lewins, one of the consultants here, and this is another slightly different podcast in that today I'm talking to somebody I've never met before, never spoken to before, but a very warm welcome to Simon Fleming.
Afternoon.
So Simon, just explain a bit, who are you, first of all?
My name's Simon Fleming, and I always find this kind of verbal bio stuff a bit weird. So I'm an orthopaedic ST7, or at least I would be an ST7, an orthopaedic registrar, if I wasn't out of program at the moment, doing my research on operative competency in trauma and orthopaedics and how we decide that people have it. In my spare time, I'm also involved with a number of different trainee organisations. So I'm the immediate past president of the British Orthopaedic Trainee Association. So we represent all the orthopaedic registrars in the UK, as well as core foundation and medical students who are passionate about ortho. And I work with some other organisations around training. So things like the Academy of Trainees Doctors Group, which is the trainee arm of the Academy of Medical Royal Colleges, and the International Conference in Residency Education. So I literally yesterday got back from their big conference in Canada, trying to make training better kind of around the world.
Okay. And people will listen to that and go, well, that's fantastic, but why on earth are you talking to him? And the reason I'm talking to you is because of the stuff you did with BOTA back in 2016 that led to the Hammer It Out campaign that many people will have seen on Twitter. So just sort of going back then, what was the census that you sent out, and why did BOTA send that out?
Yeah, so at the time I was vice president of the British Orthopaedic Trainee Association, and as a committee, we started having a discussion led by the then president, Mustafa Rashid, and it was something that we all had a feel of, which is that whenever we went into meetings or presented, BOTA, like a lot of organizations, like ACIT, like the BMA, like anything, were kind of accused of being a bit of an echo chamber.
Yeah.
And accused of being sort of self-aggrandizing, self-confirming. You know, we all sit in a room, agree how right we are, and then go and say that on behalf of all trainees ever, we say this.
Yep.
And we realized that though we were probably still the best positioned organization, because people talk to us and email us and we have regional reps and so on, we needed to know more about what our membership wanted from us, how they felt. And we realized that the current measures of that, the kind of quantitative measures of that, were things like the GMC survey, JCST survey, which are powerful tools, but they have their own weaknesses. So for example, the GMC survey, if you want to raise concerns, the first thing you have to do is give up your anonymity. And the first thing they do is give your results to your trainer or your boss or your TPD, which, to all intents and purposes, means very few people ever say anything bad in the GMC survey.
Yeah.
And the GMC acknowledged this, that underreporting is happening and that underreporting is probably underreported. So we designed a census and we wanted to know about our membership, their demographics, where they saw themselves going, what they were passionate about, what made them happy, what made them sad. And one of the things that we wanted was for them to be honest with us. So we basically made them a promise. We promised that we would keep their data anonymous, that we would literally, you know, resign our training numbers before we give up their data. We promised that we would act on whatever we found. So, you know, if it said, we hate BOTA, we wish you didn't exist, we'd all just resign and go to the pub. Because, you know, if that's how our membership feel, then in the end, an organization is only ever as powerful as their membership, and you have a duty to represent them. And because we're not daft, we found a little bit of money and said, anyone who enters this survey will be eligible to win the cost of your exit exam or the cash equivalent. And so we got a decent response rate, certainly for a non-compulsory survey.
Yeah.
And at the time, I mean, I've always felt that there was a problem in healthcare around negative workplace behaviors. But again, I was always worried whether it was, you know, just me. And it's that whole kind of joke about, you know, every friendship group has kind of a bit of an ass. And if you don't know who it is, it's probably
you. Yeah.
So So I was kind of worried that maybe it was just me. So I kind of said, look, can we ask some questions about bullying, undermining and harassment? And we did. And we asked two real questions around that. We asked two questions. One was, in the last 4 weeks, have you experienced bullying, undermining or harassment?
Yep.
And then in your trauma and orthopedic career ever, whatever that might look like, have you ever witnessed it? And we had a lot of debate around about that. But number one, perception is important. We have a real problem in medicine, but also, you know, in specifically in trauma orthopedics around recruitment and retention, about training morale and burnout and all the rest. And a lot of that comes down to what you see, what the medical students see, what the foundation doctors see, the behaviors and attitudes and culture. Culture is that invisible wall that you walk past when you walk into a building and you just get a sense of the place. So we asked those questions, and the data came back, and it kind of knocked us back, because it was pretty significant. It was not an ignorable number, the kind of rates of bullying, undermining and harassment. And so BOTA has an excellent relationship with the British Orthopaedic Association, our parent organization, and every year at their congress, BOTA has its own session, the BOTA session. And so we started a bit of a whispering campaign of, you know, golly, you've got to come to the BOTA session this year. It's going to be good. It's going to be something exciting. It's going to be like nothing we've ever seen. Because normally it's, you know, we present, you know, the big audit we've done, or the big whatever we've done. And instead, I stood up.
Guess what?
in a room filled with the great and the good of orthopedics. There were college presidents. There were visiting presidents from the international community. And I started a talk with, I'm a bully, I harass, and I undermine, and I think we can do better. And then we because we presented the data sequentially, so, you know, it was building up to a thing. And then I took over at the sporting bit. And we presented this to the orthopedic community. And then after we presented it, and we thought very hard about whether that was the right place to do it. We felt that it was. If you look at all the different models for change, they all say that at the beginning you've got to make a big noise.
Yep.
We then had to come up with what we were going to do about it. And it's very much been an iterative process, kind of learning through mistakes, which I should point out, you know, all successes are down to the membership and the committee, and all mistakes are entirely mine. But the first stage was a brand. And we started talking, and actually it was another member of the committee who is currently our vice president, Matt Brown, who came up with the idea of Hammer It Out. But we'd all been bouncing around these ideas that we wanted something kind of self-deprecating, sort of disarming, but something that resonated with the orthopedic community, something that was a doing word, an active word, but wasn't damaging or negative or pejorative. And we came up with this idea of Hammer It Out. And you've got to understand that even since then, and still now, 3 years later, I get people who say they don't like it, that it's a masculine phrase, that it's aggressive, that it's violent in some way. And we've done a lot of reflecting on that, but we feel that on the whole, the brand speaks for itself. And people know that that's not where it's coming from. You know, the anti-smoking campaign had Stamp It Out. And I don't think anyone said, are you suggesting that we go around kicking people? It was catchy and it trended well. And we knew that we had no budget. We were a trainee organization. Yeah. We had £0, zero pence in the bank. So anything we did was going to have to be driven by word of mouth and social media and people like me going places and talking to people. So it would have to be something that was catchy. And that was where it came from. That was where it started.
And I mean, do you think that orthopedics has an, if you like, image problem, or has an issue with bullying, undermining or harassment? Or do you think you just got honest results that are probably reflective across all specialities?
I think it's both. So again, there was a conscious effort that we should start with our own house, that we should start with what we know.
Yeah.
We knew that there was a problem, or at least I felt that there was a problem in trauma and orthopedics. There is an image problem with trauma and orthopedics, and then there is also an image problem with surgery in general, in terms of the culture of power and hierarchy, the culture of undermining, which is, you know, making people feel small, worthless, having less value. And then if you look at harassment is things like, you know, the protected characteristics. So sexual harassment and homophobia and racism. And again, we felt that certainly there was an issue within orthopedics, but that undeniably the GMC survey data, the NHS staff survey data, yeah, tells us that this is a problem that is everywhere. So we started with orthopedics, both because it was our own house. And then one of the things I was very mindful of is, again, using our weaknesses as a strength. And it's worked in that people say to me, when we realized that orthopedics were being reflective and orthopedics were admitting that they had a problem and orthopedics were driving forward positive culture change, we, as insert specialty here, yeah, felt like, how could we not? You know, when there is an orthopedic registrar touring the world telling people that they can be kinder and better and culturally more accepting, everyone else is like, well, crikey, if, yeah, you know, they can do it, what are we doing? Because it is everywhere. It is pervasive at every level of healthcare. And to be fair, I've been lucky enough, and it is luck more than judgment, to go around the world. And this is everywhere. Every healthcare system I've visited says, yeah, we've got the same problem, right, maybe in different ways or in different levels. But the US, Canada, Australia, they all say, yeah, we've got a culture of hierarchy and power. We've got a culture of certain behaviors being acceptable. And but we just started with ortho because it's what we knew and it was a good place to start.
And I think I'd echo that, actually, sort of just seeing you on Twitter. And as you rightly say, you think, gosh, here's an orthopedic surgeon saying we need to be nicer. That's, you know, with the stereotype absolutely firmly in my mind, I thought that is the last person I'd be expecting to be saying these things. You know, you'd normally expect the, you know, people like the cuddly pediatricians like myself to be doing this. And it really struck me, and the sort of the stuff that you tweet, it really strikes. And I think we cannot just sort of say it's an orthopedic problem. There's an article in the BMJ either this week or last week, which says that bullying, harassment and undermining costs the NHS about $2 billion annually. So it's clearly not a problem that people can ignore. And it's not just orthopedics.
Yeah, well, undeniably. I mean, the NHS staff survey demonstrates year on year on year on year on year about a 25% staff-on-staff bullying rate. And that's across the board. Mm. That's at all levels of seniority, whether you are a allied healthcare professional or whether you are a doctor or whether you are a manager, from the lowest of the low to the highest of the high, about a quarter of us are being bullied by someone, regardless of job, rank, gender, age, sexuality, all the rest. It is pervasive everywhere. And I was actually asked to comment on that article by one of the editors of the BMJ. And I said, well, undeniably, because we know that negative workplace behaviors have a massive impact on your cognitive ability, your productivity, plus obviously, you know, sick days, complaints, all of that sort of stuff. We know that that will have implications on patient care, which really is what it's all, yes, about. But my thing was, it's like the MasterCard advert, right? So, you know, bullying and undermining and harassment costs the NHS 2 billion quid a year, but the personal cost to patients and staff is priceless. You put a figure on what it costs a healthcare professional feel worthless. Put a monetary value on being burnt out or on considering taking your own life because of the environment you work in, or you put a financial cost on harm to a patient that occurred because people were arguing in the background, and it just affects everything we do and everything we are and everything healthcare should be about.
So having, you know, presented this data and banged this drum very loudly, what's been the response that you've got from sort of the orthopedic community in this country?
I mean, what I would say is, on the whole, mostly the response is pushing against an open door. It is a mix of shock and sadness and disappointment. Mm. But of course, again, I was talking about kind of learning from my mistakes. So when we started, we were pretty, we were banging a pretty loud drum. And so unsurprisingly, there was a lot of defensiveness. Yeah. And, you know, that's not me, or how dare you say that? And it's because it feels accusatory, and to an extent, it was. And that wasn't or isn't, I think, actually the right way to do it. When I do my talk, I talk about the parenting model. I talk about the fact that most of us had parents, and most of our parents loved us and wanted what was best for us. And sometimes our parents were mean to us and said things that hurt our feelings. But mostly, you know, they're good people. And then about 15, 20 years ago, someone turned around to parents and said, you know what, if you hit your kid, if you spank your child, you're a child abuser. That's child abuse. Mm. And then, of course, people thought about that for a while and they went, wait, are you telling me that I'm a child abuser? And then they went, wait, that means I must be a victim of child abuse because I was hit. So you're calling my parents child abusers? Jesus. Mm. And unsurprisingly, that approach just didn't work. And what worked instead was, look, the way you are parented and were parented was fine. It worked. You're a great person. We just know better. And so actually, we very much changed the way I have these conversations with people. Because if you finger wag, we're all just human. And you just go, you know, you don't know me.
No.
And you can't tell me that I'm a bad person. It's more about getting people to see that there are better, easier, kinder ways of living and working and getting along, and that it is in everyone's best interests, patients, staff, you know, it is in your partner's at home best interest that you're nice at work, because you'll come home and be happier and more fulfilled. Like, it literally pervades every facet of life to just slightly modify our behaviours in the workplace.
And I can see that appealing hugely to, I think, a lot of trainees and, you know, say, relatively younger consultants, for example. Has it gone down as well with those that have been doing it for 30 years and, well, this is how we did it in my day and it's not going to change?
I mean, what I would say is my experience of the more senior consultants is my experience of the more junior consultants, which is there is a spectrum.
Yeah.
There's a real bell curve. So on one side of the bell curve, you have people who innately like power. They like making people do things that they don't want to do. They are not good people, because doctors are humans and there is a spectrum.
Yeah.
Interestingly, on the other side of the spectrum, I have met some senior consultants who I literally am like, God, I wish I could grow up to be half the person you are, half the trainer, half the surgeon, half the doctor, half the human being. And interestingly, they're often quite challenging too, because they can't imagine a world in which these behaviours exist, because they have created a culture whereby they don't exist. So they've not seen them for 30 years in their unit, because no one would dare, because it's toxic and bad and all the rest. And then within the middle, you have normal people who go, you know, mea culpa, I can't believe my behavior makes someone feel that way. Or really, is that, you know, I've had people say, is that racist? And you're like, yeah, that's that's racist. And so, you know, on one hand, I've had people come up to me and literally shake my hand and congratulate me for being brave and an advocate and aspirational and inspirational, which makes me hugely uncomfortable. And then on the other hand, I've had people come up to me, take my hand and tell me that I'll never work in this town again or never work in this country again. And then you get everything in between. And that's the thing I've really learned, which is that culture change means changing people, and people are inherently irrational. And so all the things you or I would do to maybe change how we treat sepsis or we treat DVT doesn't work, because it's you can't. I can put up as many graphs as I want saying being mean makes people sad and less good at their jobs, but surely we all know that actually changing the way we behave to one another and behave to ourselves to a certain extent is far harder, because you have to change something very internal, very personal to them, which is their belief structure and how they behave on a day-to-day basis.
So what's next for Hammer It Out? I've seen, am I right in thinking it's Cut It Out is the sort of surgical equivalent of that? Is that?
Yeah. So I recently was in Canada, and I introduced myself to something very similar to this. And I said something like, and in my spare time, I'm trying to change the world. So Hammer It Out's sort of taken a life of its own. So Hammer It Out is a campaign run by Bota. It's a Bota thing. And as I deem it, I will hand over the campaign itself to the organization. However, undeniably, I am a face for culture change, and I will continue to hashtag Hammer It Out, because it's kind of a thing that I care passionately about, and my advocacy has kind of gone beyond orthopedics now to healthcare in general. Cut It Out is the hashtag that kind of tends to be used pan-surgically, but interestingly, it's used interchangeably with Hammer It Out. I've seen pediatricians and dermatologists talking about Hammer It Out in their talks, because it's become synonymous with culture change. Wider than that, I'm now working with the Academy of Medical Royal Colleges and other organizations to try and get some sort of cohesiveness around a lot of the messages and around a lot of the materials that are out there. You know, doctors especially are obsessed with content, but we need to be mindful not to keep reinventing the wheel. The Edinburgh College have done great work on this. The psychiatrists have done great work on unconscious bias. So if that stuff's out there already, you know, why do it again? You know, if someone wants me to point them to something, I send them to the BMA or whoever. I don't go, you know what you should do? You should write an e-learning module. on a sideline, I've been either lucky or unlucky enough to be partly involved in some work around legislation change. If I think about smoking cessation or seatbelts, it's undeniable that there needs to be a certain amount of bite to some of the behavior stuff that we're doing. And kind of for me, it's a very organic process, because again, it's about dealing with people. So as things change and move on, so the campaign will evolve. And it's a mixture of marketing and promotion and getting the message out there. Because realistically, changing culture from all the reading I've done and speaking to people who've been involved in it takes about 10 to 15 years. Yeah. And so I can't expect Bota or ACID or any of these organizations to have this as their number one thing that they're going to do forever. But for me, it's something that matters. And for me, it's something that I think, what's 10 to 15 years if I get to change the world and make things a little bit better for patients and healthcare staff alike?
So finally then, Simon, for those people who say, listen to this or think, actually, that's something I'd like to get involved in, as a starting point, is something as simple as just, say, following the hashtag Hammer It Out. Is that a reasonable starting point? And where can we find you on Twitter?
So there's really three things. So there's the shameless self-promotion, which is, hashtag anything that you want to talk about when you're talking about workplace behaviors, I would ask you to add the hashtag Hammer It Out. I'm on Twitter at @orthopodreg. But if someone says, look, I want to make a start, how do I make a start? It's really the easiest and the hardest thing I can ask anyone to do, which is to role model these behaviors. And I don't care if you are an undergrad medical student or you are professor of all things. If you role model the behaviors you would wish to see, whether it's saying please and thank you or apologizing because I put my foot in it all the time, or just trying to be a bit kinder or a bit more thoughtful, it is literally that changes the world. Because if you role model and then you change three or four other people, it's like a behavioral pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
You literally can change the world just by changing the way you behave yourself. And it's really hard work and really easy all at the same time.
Fantastic, Simon. So you're the Ponzi scheme, basically, of the behavioural world.
I am the Ponzi scheme of fixing the NHS. Perfect. Except it makes me no money.
Yes, well, there you go. Simon, thank you so much for joining us. That was really inspirational and fantastic to speak to you today. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.